Order of the meeting of the retirement committee on Tuesday, July 22nd, here at noon and conference room C2. May I do a roll call, please?
Roll call, Director Wiegand.
Here.
Director Mesquite.
Present.
Director Yeo. He is logging in. Director Nguyen. Director Green. Director Jung.
Present.
Director Tran. Director Sheldon. Director Meeks. Director Bilodeau.
Present.
Jason Dadakis.
Here.
Kevin O'Toole.
Here.
Roy Herndon.
Here.
Bill Lever. You do have a quorum of your committee.
Okay, great. And you want Director Yeo to verbally
announce? Yes. Director Yeo.
He looked like he walked away. Shut the door. Oh, here he comes.
Director Yeo, present.
Director Yeo, do you want to unmute just so we have your voice as logged in? I don't know if he can hear it. We should write a note on a piece of paper and hold it. Yeah, I don't think he can hear us.
He's fine.
Maybe we'll send a chat to him and then check in as
we'll
we're
note
going.
That he's present online.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Are there any items too late to be agendized? Okay, great. All right, now is the time for visitor participation. Is there anyone wishing to address the committee? Seeing no hands online, I will move on to the consent calendar. Item number one, the minutes of the committee from May 27th. Is there anyone who wants to make a recommendation or a vote for this?
I'll move approval.
Okay. Anyone want a second?
I'll second.
Okay. All right, I will call the vote, please.
Roll call, Director Wiegand.
Yes.
Director Mesquite.
Yes.
Director Yeo. Jason Dadakis.
Yes.
Kevin O'Toole.
Yes.
That motion carries with five yes votes. Director Yeo indicating yes.
Okay.
On camera.
Perfect. Okay, great. All right. Item number two is the money purchase plan investment lineup and 457B plan red flag fund review. John, do you want to hit it off?
I do.
All right.
Thank you, everybody.
You.
Thanks for taking time today. So we have to review everything in the 457 plan, the 401A plan and the 457, just looking at red flags today. So stop me along the way if you have questions. I will begin with minutes from two meetings ago, January of this year. In our meeting, we came in with an agenda to review two red flag funds, American Funds New Perspective in the global large stock growth category, and a mid-blend fund, the Carlin Scout Mid-Cap, both were red flagged in 2024. We did not have at that time any red flags in the 457 plan. As we're doing today, we started that meeting with a review of previous meeting minutes, market and economic review, which we'll touch on again today. Fund additions, no new funds added to the plan. We ended up keeping American Funds New Perspective on the red flag list. And we removed Carillon Scout Midcap, which has had a tremendous 18 months of performance, from the red flag list. So the red flag process working properly. We're keeping us in funds after they recover from their underperformance. We did add one new red flag to the 457, which we're looking at today. The AllianceBernstein Large Cap Growth is on red flag. This will be our second review of that fund on its red flag status. Discussion items, all other funds met or exceeded their benchmarks. Plan balances in the 401A at that time, under the $92 million, were just under $200 million as of today. Average account balance, $530,000 held there. And then item number three, we reported on the RFI process to determine our stable value provider, which is Invesco Stable Fund. That is now live as of June of this year. There are now two safe harbor options for participants to consider: a money market fund and a stable value fund. We'll be discussing those in more detail today as we need to make a decision on where the money will be wired on November 1st from Empower that's coming from the old Prudential Guaranteed Income Fund. So now two choices for participants to consider for their safe harbor investment. So let's jump forward to April of this year. So coming into this meeting, we did have that AB Large Growth red flag on the 457 plan, American Funds New Perspective, still on red flag from summer of last year. So no additions were made to either plan at that time. AB stayed on red flag, and we were actually very comfortable with American Funds' new perspective to take it off red flag, but we did put it on our gray flag, which means it's not in the minutes, but an item that we're still giving extra attention to. I think you'll be very comfortable with that fund by the end of today's meeting. All of the options being the other options being the benchmark 457 plan at that time, 42 million, average account balance 140,000. Questions for me on minutes from earlier this year? Okay, we'll give you a bit of a market overview. These are May 30 numbers. We've had another month, of course, since this was created, but just to give you a flavor, so most people know that on April 9th of this year, we had the S&P 500 down 19% from its all-time peak. The markets have recovered from those lows and gone on to set new highs. If you look at the entire year, at the first 5 months of the year, the Dow is essentially break-even. The NASDAQ was down about 1% still, the S&P up about 1%. But as you notice from the quarter to date or the last 90 days, ending May 31st, some very positive numbers there as the market went down second half of February, March, and the first part of April, and then recovered dramatically. So your shorter-term performance better than your whole year performance. If you look at the growth versus value battle, it's actually been a little bit more growth-oriented in the quarter. But if you look at it for the year to date, value's done a bit better. Growth went up more, went down more, and then up more again. So it's more volatile than the value category. Mid caps, if you look at mid caps as a blend category, up about 1% for the year, 4% in the prior 90 days. But if you look at growth, in the 90 days, up 13, value only up 1. If you look at year to date, growth is actually winning that battle. So different from large, growth doing better in the mid cap category. Then small stocks, which have struggled the most, they're hurting most from higher interest rates. They'll also, the impact from tariffs will be unknown in many of those businesses and their ability to deal with that. So that's why you're seeing small stock underperformance. So as of the end of May, they were actually down 6% for the year, up 5% for the quarter. So you can see that they were down quite a bit, double digits at one point. The big winner in the stock markets this year has been international investing. So Europe, Africa, and the Far East index, 17% year to date. So those of you with diversified portfolios that waited for international stocks to thrive, it's finally happening so far this year. Emerging markets up about 9%. So everything overseas doing better than the US so far this year. You've definitely seen some big moves in the European stock markets. Bonds have been positive this year. So year to date, up 2.5%. At the end of June, those were up about 4%. So you've had some good returns by being in the bond markets, treasury bills, or your money market funds. In the first 5 months of the year, up 1.78, those are yielding about 4.25. And that's the benchmark that's most sensitive to what the Fed does with short-term interest rates. Should that change, that will be reflected first in the short-term markets. We look at commodities, up about 3% year to date. For the quarter, down about 5%. But if you look at recent events in commodities, silver, gold, uranium, palladium, you name it, serious moves higher in a lot of those prices of commodities. So this is where we stand for the year. So a dip and a recovery. If we had May June numbers up here, the equity markets continued into the positive territory. The peak of the markets previously was middle of February, and we've since exceeded those in June. If I jump forward here to the different categories of the market, if you're looking at the different sections, there's 11 different categories in the S&P 500. So the numbers here in the orange are just for the month of May. If they're in the purple, they're for the entire first 5 months of the year. So you can see categories that have struggled this year. Consumer discretionary, that's where Tesla and Amazon stock have the biggest weights, but we have seen a slowdown in those stocks. Energy stocks were down in the first 5 months of the year. Healthcare stocks had a really difficult month of May, mainly because of one company, which is UnitedHealth, which you probably know is under significant fraud investigations. Looks like lots of overcharging and bribery accusations that are out there. So that's brought down the whole healthcare sector in general. If you're looking at the biggest winners, May was certainly nice to see in technology, a big recovery, getting closer to break even for the year. But the biggest winners have been utilities, which was a big winner last year, and then consumer staples doing well. So it's been a bit of a mixed market, but certainly an argument for being diversified because certain categories that were doing poorly last year have been better this year and vice versa. Any questions for me about any of that? All right, let's dig a little deeper here. So let's look at the style boxes and asset diversification. So this is within the 401(k) plan. So this is your money purchase plan. Reminder, these top nine boxes are your domestic equities. So growth is on the right, blend is in the middle, values on the left, and then top to bottom, we go from large company stocks down to mid-sized company stocks, down to small company stocks. We typically have multiple funds in each category, as you can see. And in many cases, we have index funds mixed up with actively managed funds. So if we start with large blend, where there's actually three options, we have the Vanguard 500 Index, which is a popular investment, 13% of this plan, and then an actively managed Hartford Fund and an actively managed Parnassus Core Equity Fund. In mid-blend, there's an index fund from Principal, an active from Carillon Scout. And then in small blend, we have an index and an active from BlackRock. On the left-hand side, that's your value holdings. Those are all active managers. On the right-hand side, your growth managers, one of which, Fidelity Large Cap Growth, is an index fund mixed with an active manager from T. Rowe Price. As we go down into the overseas investments below the nine boxes, you'll notice one change. Kind of grayed out MFS International intrinsic value that was under foreign large growth. Morningstar has recategorized that as a foreign large blend fund. It's always been interesting. It's a value fund in its name, but it's been a growth fund for a number of years, but it's kind of gone where the money is being made. Now they've backed off and been a bit more balanced. So they're a blend fund, which is a combination of growth and value. So we still have a pure international growth, which is Fidelity International Capital Appreciation. Now we have a blend, so I think that's actually probably a good thing that it made that move. American Funds New Perspective, we saw that on and off the red flag list, so that's 1.35% of the plan. You see that off to the right. And then our specialty categories are all down below, so these are vertically integrated categories of the economy. So natural resources and technology on the right, precious metals and realty on the left. Precious metals having a very good year, real estate struggling a bit with higher interest rates. Right in the middle there of that lower section is your new world. So emerging markets, some pretty good returns coming from different areas. China's economy is accelerating, so we are seeing some pretty good returns from their market. And then we have our target date funds at the bottom there. So those are fully diversified investments based on your participants' ages, and you can see what is invested there. So we have a traditional balanced fund, which is a 60-40 approach to stocks, to bonds, and cash. And then the target dates, which are age-based, where the further out in time you are, the more aggressive they'll be. As you get closer to retirement, they become more conservative. So most of the assets are here, but if we go to the second page, these are our fixed income investments. So the left-hand side, we still have about 5% of this plan is in the Empower Guaranteed Income Fund, or the GIF, as it's been nicknamed. That will all change on November 1st of this year. We do have the Vanguard Federal Money Market, which was added a couple of years ago when we moved to Fidelity. That's a pretty big investment, almost 17% of plan assets, paying people 4.25% interest in treasury bills. And then traditional bonds, we have the PHIL U.S. Bond Index, American Funds Bond Fund of America, which represent about 11% of the plan. And then the Invesco Stable Value there, so it's brand new. This was printed before investment was available there. We have seen a few hundred thousand dollars go in there since this was created. Any questions for me about that? So asset diversification, where we have the most aggressive investments down to the most conservative. So on the left-hand side are numbers for reference. The Morningstar styles for the funds are listed, the names, the symbols, the assets as of June 9th. So you get an idea dollar-wise what's in each fund. And then percentage, that represents a percentage of the total $200 million investments. To the right of that, where it has the hashtag or pound sign EE, it's the number of employees. So in bold, we're giving the number of current or former employees of the district that bold balances in each one of those funds. To the right of that is the expense ratio by prospectus. We do still have some funds that have revenue sharing. That revenue sharing is paid back to participants. So if they do own that fund that does have revenue sharing, that's a credit back to their account. And then you see the net expense ratios to the right of that, telling you what they're actually paying. Make a comparison to benchmarks. We have the category benchmarks on the far right. And then you can look at the net expense ratios, get an idea how competitive the expenses are versus the typical funds in those categories. Those category benchmarks are set by Morningstar. So this is funds 1 through 19. And then on the second page, 20 through 37. 37 is our new investment here, the Invesco Stable Value. So that's brand new. So currently there are actually three safe harbors. We'll be down to two as we get towards November. You see a total there, 199, 500, or 600,000 invested. We have 63 loans outstanding, 1.1 million borrowed. Total participants, including former employees, 361 holding the 200 million. So if you printed this like I did, you have quick access to the decision sheet. As we go through and make our decisions, we can put this on here. So feel free to use that as a reference. But before we completely dig into the Zephyr reports everybody loves so much, we do have one big decision to make that's on a timely basis, which is deciding where that money will be met. So those wires are happening for both plans. We have to decide where roughly $11 million in the 401A is going to go. And our two options would be into the new Invesco Stable Value Trust or into the Vanguard Federal Market Money Market Fund. So at the top, those are the values as of July 10th. There's also $2 million in the 457 plan. Fidelity needs to know by August 15th. So given the board meeting cycle, we have to make a decision today to make this effective November 1st of 2025. So option A, the Invesco Stable Value, current yield is just under 3%. Remember, stable value funds will go longer in terms of duration to try to pick up yield. So the average maturity in that portfolio is 3.3 years. The credit rating, there's 28% in AAA bonds. There's half of the money in AA bonds, 12% in single A, and 9% in BBB. All of those are considered investment grade. BBB or above is investment grade, according to the credit agencies. The expense ratio is 32 basis points. As you might remember, stable value funds have insurance wrap providers that guarantee the principal. There are nine different insurance companies guaranteeing the balance in there. And remember also that when you put money in the Invesco Stable Value, there's a 90-day equity wash. You can pull money out of there for distributions, loans at any time. But if you wanted to put it into the federal money market fund, you would have to wait 90 days. You'd have to move the money from a stable value into a stock fund, into a bond fund, which you can do at any time, and wait 90 days to move it over. Sometimes investments can be difficult to time, but most investors understand yield. And as you can see in option B, the yield on the money market is quite a bit more attractive at the moment. That's a much more sensitive interest rate because you can see the portfolio duration is only 32 days. Were the Fed to change interest rates, they would change very quickly in the money market fund. Everything in a money market fund by statute has to be U.S. Treasuries. As you may all know, be aware now, the U.S. Treasury is only rated AA credit. So that's where it's 88% is AA plus, 12% is AA. The expense ratio from Vanguard is 11 basis points, and there is no equity wash. Any money you have in the Vanguard can move out at any time at your leisure. So, committee, which of these two should we move the little over $12 million into?
So if it goes to the Vanguard, somebody wants to move it into the Vesco?
They can do it right away. Yep.
Whereas the converse of that, if the money goes to the Vesco and the person prefers it to be in the money market, they'd have to wait 90 days.
It'd have to be in an investment that could vary in those 90 days.
You have to pull it out somewhere else.
Then you can't. You couldn't even transfer. Even after 90 days, you couldn't transfer directly?
What you have to do, you can never move it directly between the two. Okay. So you have to move it out of Invesco and then fill the 90-day clock. And then if it's in some other investment, the bond fund, the balance fund, the stock fund, then you can move it into the bank.
So less of a hassle if it's Vanguard, right?
Yes. You're highly liquid and your yield is higher in Vanguard right now.
But that could change if interest rates come down.
Good.
They're more responsive for 32 days.
They are more responsive. You know, the current forecast markets say that the Fed will move between 1 and 2 times this year. They typically move a quarter point at a time, so that would speak to a rate maybe at 3.75 by the end of the year. Now, should the Fed chairman change, that could go down much faster. The Fed board is 12 voting members, so even if the Fed president was changed, we don't know how that will change Fed policy, but that is something to consider. I think my thought would be is everybody likes the freedom to do what they think is best for themselves. So if you have no equity wash and your money in treasury bills with Vanguard, then you can quickly move it to the Invesco if that became more attractive from a yield standpoint.
The U.S. Treasury is still just as safe as 9 providers.
Yes. The loaded question, but we'll say yes to that.
Yeah. And expense ratio. Expense ratio is less as well. So there's,
yes, sir.
There's a lot more, in my opinion, positives on the option B. If you, if you're just keeping your money just to, you know, keep it in a place that you kind of feel safe with,
yeah,
you can always move it out right away. You pay less on expense ratio, still protected by the U.S. Treasury.
Yep.
And you get a higher rate, at least right now.
Yes, sir.
I would concur with that. And I would just say, Scott, when we faced this decision on the first tranche of money coming over from the GIF, we did put it into the money market.
We did.
That's what we did before.
We did, yep.
Okay.
Yep. This would be consistent.
So, guys, right now the yields show a big advantage to the money market fund, but over the long term, is that typically the way money market funds behave, or is this kind of an anomaly?
Yeah, that's a great, sophisticated question. So Invesco happens to have a little chart here to show you that. So this isn't their product, but just the overall markets. So stable value is the first figure here, and then money markets in the lighter blue, and then fixed income would refer to the bond markets. So you probably remember from 2012 to 2019, interest rates were essentially at zero. So money market funds were paying very little. Your CDs and your banks were paying very little. You know, one basis point was an actual quoted interest rate that was fairly common. So if you look over recent periods of time, 1 year and 3 year, it's certainly been much more attractive to be in the money market. The 1 year trailing is 5.25. The 3 year trailing is 3.97. Stable value has not kept up with that over that time frame. But if you go a little further out in time, over 7 years, it's virtually a tie. Over 10 years, because you do have that window of time when interest rates were at zero, stable value has done better. 2.25 was the average interest rate. Money market was 183. Bonds were only 171. So the stable value industry would make the argument is over a full interest rate cycle, they will end up paying people more.
That period of time, what was that, quantitative easing, or wasn't that what we called it? Like that, yes, that was an anomaly.
It was an anomaly.
So they're saying that during that anomaly, it was only 2.25 to 1.83, which really isn't, on the grand scheme, that great of a...
Not a huge difference. But if you did have a prolonged period of time where intermediate and long-term interest rates stayed higher, that would give Invesco stable value and other stable value funds time to load up on bonds that pay 5 and 6% right now, so that if interest rates fell, they would have a pretty attractive yield. But what they're waiting right now is for bonds to mature that they bought in 2020 and 2021 and 2022 when interest rates were very low from COVID. And so that's why this yield is less than 3% at the moment. So the longer interest rates stay higher, the better it is for stable value who will load up on those bonds. Now, I run bond portfolios for some of our private clients, and that's the same thing. Every time a bond comes due, we're reinvesting it at a higher interest rate. That's what Invesco is doing right now. So if they went down tomorrow, it wouldn't be as great, good for Invesco if it went down 2 years from now. Great questions, everybody. So we have, are we at a point where a motion is possible here?
Yeah, we probably want to. Anyone in the audience want to chime in to help us or give any opinions?
Seems like money market is the preferred, like it's the winner. I mean, by far at this point in time,
right?
Flexibility, move out if you want.
And yeah, that's right. I mean, if we need to reevaluate, you know, we have a pretty window we can do it in, right? Like, I mean, it's not going to be overnight, but there's...
Well, Fidelity's going to queue this up for November 1st, but as of November 1st, people have their money in the Vanguard. They can do it immediately. So there won't be any waiting period. And people can still pull their money out of the Prudential GIF right now and move it into other stock funds or bond funds. They're not limited by that. They just can't move it into the bank or money market. They have the same 90-day equity wash provision. So they don't have to wait for November 1st. We're just, this is the residual money that's still there. So.
I can make a motion to move the money into option B, which is the federal, the Vanguard federal money market.
I'll second that motion.
Great. I have a motion second. Anyone online want to comment or share their thoughts?
I can't see any hands.
Okay, great. I will call for the vote.
Roll call, Director Wygant?
Yes.
Director Mezqua?
Yes.
Director Nguyen? I mean, Director Jung?
Jung, aye.
Jason Dadigas?
Yes.
Kevin O'Toole?
Yes.
That motion carries 5-0.
I just, did Director Yeo head out or since?
He's off camera now, so I couldn't
okay.
see him.
I just wanted to make sure that.
I'm here.
There he is.
We're good, right?
Yes,
okay. Can you hear me?
Oh, now we can.
Yeah, yeah. I fixed the audio issue. Yeah.
Okay, perfect.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, everybody. So there might be some folks that remember the work that we did as we moved to Fidelity to evaluate every single fund in the plan for fee efficiency. To give everyone a little bit of background, for many years, the expenses of the plan were funded through revenue sharing. But as we grew in size and were able to bring down vendor costs, we've been able to move in many cases to zero revenue sharing versions of the share classes we own. But as the world of Wall Street and the financial markets can be a little surprising at times. In many cases, the most fee efficient versions of these share classes are not the zero revenue share versions, but a share class where the revenue share is refunded to that participant. So occasionally, we will bring this report forward for you to review to show you potential efficiencies that we can bring by possibly changing share classes. Or we're happy with the fund, can we get a better deal with the fund company? Now, there's not individual negotiations that can occur between the district and the fund companies. They're set by prospectus. Everybody who owns the share class pays the same fee, regardless of the amount of money they've invested. You do sometimes have to have fund minimums to qualify for a share class. So typically, the cheaper ones, you need to have more money to get into. But in this particular case, we want to review options to see if there's any changes we could potentially consider. So I'll start with the money purchase plan. On the left-hand side are the funds that we already have investments in. The category or the style is listed on the left-hand side, the name, the symbol. The assets were the same assets you saw on another page. So those are listed here. We have a Fidelity International Fund, a Mid-Cap Value Fidelity Fund, and then two potential options for the mid-cap growth Janus Henderson Enterprise. The category average expense ratio, which again is Morningstar's category average for each one of these styles, is listed next. Then the net expense ratio, which is set by prospectus. Again, if you buy the share class anywhere, you're paying the same fee. And then what revenue sharing it gives back is listed here. So these down here are zero revenue share classes. So it charges 66, has no refunds, the net fee is 66, but the two Fidelity choices, you notice Fidelity's International Fund charges 81, refunds 35, so that's a net 46 your participants are currently paying. If you look at low price stock, it's 89, refunding 35, that's a 54 in terms of cost. So on the right-hand side of these is a potential share classes we could consider. Now, you think it would all make sense even within the same fund company, within the same share classes, that you'd want to use one particular share class for all of the district's funds, but no, of course, that doesn't make any sense. So if you went from the retail share class that we have on international to the K6, which is the their zero revenue share version, you would have a 66 expense ratio with no refund. You'd be actually increasing the fee that your participants would pay. Still doesn't make any sense, right? So you see, it would be a drop in revenue share of 35 basis points, 14,000 in difference in revenue share. Your participants would actually pay $8,000 more. So no reason to give Fidelity the money. Let's keep it for our participants. The fairly low price stock, however, which has the same share class as the international, refunds 35 for a net 54. But if we went to the K6, you go to a 50 with no refund. That is actually a decrease, not a huge difference, but it does save your participants $1,000 a year. And when they look at funds to consider their options, they will notice a slightly lower sticker price of 50 versus seeing the 89 and then having to wait for the 35 basis points to come back to them. So the first recommendation we would make to the committee would be considering changing share classes on number two there. And yes, it is confusing.
Is there any downside to it?
There's not. In this particular case, it's pretty straightforward. On some of these other ones, it's a little trickier to answer your question, Director. So we don't have to vote on that quite right away, but let's look at number three for kind of a big difference comparison. Now, right now, what we already have is Janus Enterprise N shares, the N shares listed here. This is the zero revenue share version. Now, there is a version which is the I or institutional share class, which is 76 refunding 10. It's the same we have. So that wouldn't benefit us anyway, and you see the dollars don't differ. But if you went to the T, and this is where I think some downside comes in terms of perception, is you would actually go from a 66 to a 91 expense ratio. The participants are getting 35 back, but they're paying a net 56, which is 10 basis points or $2,500 a year less to go into a more expensive share class. But we would actually be sending a letter to your participants that says, we've made a change. We're going from Janus Enterprise N to Janus Enterprise T. And your expense ratio goes from 66 to 91, which is a bit of the wrong message, even though net net it is the best thing for them.
Because the new revenue share is higher, or it's, yeah. It's not just higher, but it is one.
Yeah.
The other one doesn't have it.
Yes, sir.
I mean, yeah, we've done this before, right? You mentioned the whole time we went through this kind of the first time and did it comprehensively across the plan and then communicated that to participants. Are we able to include in those communications the effect of the revenue share?
We are.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
They don't just talk about negatives.
We talk about it. We talk about it in the webinars, and the message is out there. But some people may only interact with the plan via the website, and they're not going to see that. Now, if they look at their statements, they'll see it.
Oh, so but can we message it in the actual communication to
Yeah.
say that?
We can message that the revenue share is refunded because that's contractual.
I think Scott's right. A lot of folks, and we've learned that now, are not, they're not seeing any of those, they're not looking at their communications. But if they call or they send some, you know, we could remind them that we sent and resend them the message or the information.
Because that's a significant
Yeah.
difference.
Yeah, I'll give a quick anecdote with a different plan is that a lady that I've been talking to for years hired a financial advisor, and he said, oh, you need to get out of these funds and into these because they're far cheaper. And I had to tell her, well, if you refund the revenue share and they're not actually cheaper, they're actually more expensive than the funds you currently have, but they're just looking at the sticker prices because that's a little harder to communicate.
We made a move pretty extensively a few years back. Did we get much feedback from our employees or many questions from our employees in that process?
Not that much. And my biggest headcount plan has been doing this since 2021. So there's 6,600 people in that. We mention in every webinar, which is once a quarter, I probably get three questions a year. So now, the way the committee treated this 2 years ago, which I think we should be consistent with, is if it was net cheaper, that's what we gave them. And we even did that on a few that were one basis point different. Yeah, I see something.
And that seems logical and that's defensible. I like that approach.
And that's from a litigation standpoint, we completely agree. They have the best, they have the cheapest share class on the market.
Moving forward, do we need a recommendation or how do we?
Well, I would certainly, as the advisor, recommend that we make the change in number two to the K6 shares. And then I think that's what we need to debate is on number three, do we actually make that change to the T shares from the N shares for Janus?
Beyond just that aesthetic look that it's increased, is there any other downside?
Not that I can say. Anything else that you think of?
Cheaper is cheaper.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I mean that's
and I've had committees where they say, "Oh, are you sure they refund it?" So we've had to put a statement up and show, "Here's the refunds." Yeah, and even people in the committee may not always know that. So not this committee, other committees.
Right, and for the people who don't interact with the committee or with you, Scott, I mean, in the website, and that they're getting a statement that says this is happening. Right? So they're getting documentation that this happened.
It's being paid. It's documented.
And if they're really looking at their statements with the fees, they would see that difference.
Yeah.
So, but I don't think a lot of folks are digging in there.
Probably not. But we convinced Fidelity to change that line item on the statements because they used to say fee and then have a positive number. So people thought, oh, that was a fee. So we put fee slash refunds, and people liked
I think the small things make a difference.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And if there's a problem, they'll call and they'll get a better answer than
Yeah.
just
Yeah.
more detail. So
Yeah.
Yeah.
you might get a couple calls, but
yeah.
And I think we can consider these changes alongside any fund changes we
Absolutely.
make just in one motion. So,
Yeah.
but I'm good with the first for number two and number three.
I think on the next page,
Yeah.
you've got some more of the 7 ones to do
Yes.
as well.
Yes, sir.
We jump for that. So Director is correct about the 457 plan. So here is Janus Enterprise again. So this would actually be the same change just happening with a different plan. So we would say the T shares with a net 56 basis points would be the cheaper way to go.
The other one doesn't need it because it's just a wash and the same thing.
So the other one were so this is where it's kind of fun. So we're in the N's for Janus here when the I's for Janus here. But in this case, you can actually also go to the T's, which bumps your top line number up, not very much from 79 to 82, but your net goes down by 9. So that would save people a few bucks, $567 a year. And this one saves them $669 a year. So I would recommend in this case, they both go to the T shares for the 457 plan.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's money is money.
Yep.
I agree.
All right. Thank you, everybody. We'll save that for the final vote. For items for review on the 401A, let's dig into these. So no longer a red flag, now a gray flag is our good friends from American Funds New Perspective. As a reminder, on a 5-star basis, this is a 4-star rated fund. For their qualitative measures, the highest rating Morningstar gives is gold, then silver, then bronze, then there's neutral and negative. This is a gold, so the highest rating there. And in the 1, 3, 5, and 10-year periods, American Funds has been 24th percentile, so they're beating 76% of their competitors, 32nd on the 3-year, 14th percentile on the 5-year, and over the last 10 years, 16th percentile, beating 84% of their peers. So as you'll notice on the 3-year chart, it has gotten back to benchmark in terms of overall performance, the benchmark being the Morgan Stanley Capital Investments World Index. It's also beating both of the two Morningstar benchmarks. There has been some debate over the years of which benchmark applies better to our particular fund. You might notice in the bottom right, if you're really interested in Zephyrs, that these benchmarks are all now almost all on top of each other, even though they're supposed to be three very different things. But as a symptom of the overall market, everybody owns the same stock. So the benchmarks are all pretty similar here. On the 5-year basis, American Funds still a bit below the Morgan Stanley benchmark, but comfortably beating both of the Morningstar benchmarks. If you look at individual year performance, the difficult years were 2021 and 2022 for American Funds. In 23, they beat all benchmarks, slightly underperforming one, but outperforming two last year and beating everybody so far in 2025. So 3- and 5-year charts, if I switch slides, we're looking at a 6- and 12-month chart. You see American Funds is on some very healthy momentum right now, where you can see it's outperforming all of the benchmarks pretty easily. One other way to consider this is what are the best performing alternatives you could consider? So if you look at these funds in green, our fund on the 3-year and the 5-year chart is the best of all those options. And if I jump from a longer term to a bit shorter term, you can see American Funds is in very healthy shape right now. So not red flag where we have a deadline, but gray flagged. My recommendation here to the committee would be to take it off gray flag.
Can you remind me if we put this on gray flag because of performance or another issue?
I think we put it, well, it came off red, Kevin, and then I just think because of this 5-year number was still a bit below benchmark, we thought we better keep an extra eye on it.
Based off what you presented today, I think it makes sense for us to remove the gray flag. And
yeah, so the more we roll off 21 and 22, the better the fund looks.
Will they have any changes to their leadership or anything?
Nope. Today, a crazy business where your stock picks sometimes aren't as good as other times. So, yep, good question. Same fund management team for the last 24.5 years.
Okay. No other alternative showing any better. So,
okay. Nope. They are the thing right now. All right, mid-blend. You might remember Scout spent some time on the red flag list last year. Not red flag now, and not why we're bringing this slide to your attention. We are bringing it to your attention for the index fund, the principal mid-cap S&P 400 index. That is an index fund that follows the S&P mid-cap 400. It's right there in the name, so you and I can figure that one out. Carillon looks great. It's great on its own. It's the blue square, beating the benchmark with less risk. And you notice Carillon had a wonderful 2024. And while the category is down in 2025, they're up. So everything is in good shape there. The benchmark the committee uses is the Russell Midcap benchmark. That's the black diamond. And right now, the Russell benchmark is doing better than the S&P Midcap 400 benchmark. If you look at retirement plans, pensions, these are the two most commonly used benchmarks. Vanguard has its own benchmark that they use, but these are the two most commonly used across the U.S. Right now, Russell is doing better, and so a mutual fund that follows the Russell is doing better than one that follows the S&P. Now, on the 5-year chart, it's all pretty close to a tie, so no issue there. The 3-year chart, you notice Russell doing a bit better. Those of you who have been with the committee for more than 5 years will remember we went through the same operation a few years ago. Russell does not require companies to be profitable to be in their benchmark. They just have to be of a certain size. And there are times like now and 5 years ago where Wall Street falls in love with company stocks prospects, and they will push those prices up significantly. That's happened over the last couple of years. S&P says you actually have to be making money to be in our benchmark. You have to be a certain size and be profitable. And right now, people prefer companies that are not making money. So don't ask me why. So if we look at a 6 and 12 month, it's a bit more noticeable. But we bring this up to you. You know, one way to react to this is to do nothing. Another way is to change your benchmark. A third way would be to change your fund if you wanted to do that. Now, our benchmark is the Russell Midcap for the overall category, which includes actively and passively managed funds. So we do want to point out that S&P and the fund that follows it, which is from Principal, is underperforming the Russell benchmark. So should we flag it based on that, or should we let it go because it's not really the fund's problem as much as it's the benchmark?
I want some both. In our investment policy statement, we have both.
That's an excellent question.
So we have both of them listed.
Do we? Okay.
We're mid-blend.
So then we should be fine as far as that. We don't need to change benchmarks. Does anyone want to take issue with that? Now, my concern now in the alternatives, thank you for saying that, Stephanie. That's a big help. The alternative is you could move to the Fidelity Midcap Index, which does track the Russell and it's doing a little bit better. But we've done this with several clients and done studies going back 10 years. It's almost always a tie. So if you're a contrarian, actually, we'd probably be betting the other way to maybe say S&P is going to catch up to Russell. If you're a trend follower, you would say Russell's outperformance will continue. I think if it's in the investment policy statement, we just stick to our knitting, but I wanted to bring this to the committee's attention.
I mean, the only reason I might entertain a change, given that it seems like the investment policy doesn't, we're consistent with the investment policy if we stay with what we have, but we would bring lower expenses to this investment if
That's
we did
true.
switch it, because
That is true.
Fidelity's only charges, 2 basis points, and even if you account for the revenue share, participants who, their expenses I think would be lowered by what about they should
25 to 15 there, yeah.
yeah so the principal is 25 and they share 10 back, so it's effectively 15. Fidelity doesn't share anything, but it's only 2, so you're gaining about 13 basis points of efficiency. This which is
That's an important
which
point.
is usually I would say the goal of most people in this type of investment is
Yeah.
that they're looking to minimize
Minimize costs.
their expenses. So that's
It's a good find, and
yeah,
that you
that's
see
just the
that.
one reason why it's a little bit compelling to consider this,
Yes.
given.
Let me ask my team a question. Ani, do you have confidence that there are index funds that follow the S&P 500 or S&P 400 that are going to be as low cost as the Fidelity Russell index fund?
I think this would be the closest, but we can do another check and do it. But then this was the index fund that actually stood out
Okay.
from the options that we had.
So, Jason, it would be my preference to see if we can identify maybe another index fund that follows the S&P, and then compare those two in the next meeting, because that would be both a price and investment strategy decision.
Sure.
So, if you're open to that, perhaps we flag it either gray or red today, the principal. And then, do we need to flag it? That's another argument with the IPS being followed and it's following its benchmark. So.
I mean, you could just make recommendation
Okay.
free to bring us back
bring it back.
Why don't we just do
An
that?
alternative.
Because it's not really in a category to really
I like
red
that.
flag.
I like
Yeah.
that. Let's do
Okay.
that.
Yeah.
And then the I did bring it up, I think, last time. How many Fidelity products do we have?
I don't
Adding
know.
another one, is that let us put
Yeah.
us in too many Fidelity products? Is that really a big thing? It's diversified within itself. It's just the
Yeah.
company that's managing it is different.
Yeah, I think that's an important point. Vanguard follows a third benchmark that's unique to Vanguard that's doing third. Well, I know it's worse than the Russell, and you can correct me whether it's worse than S&P, but Vanguard is a solution for some plans in this category. It wouldn't be the attractive solution at the moment, but that could change at any time. But Eric makes an important point. We don't want to be, they are a record keeper and investment provider on some funds. Do we want to minimize that exposure?
I think you bring us back some options next time, and it's almost akin to the share class changes we were just talking about,
Somewhat, yeah.
right? You could look at how much each participant would save if
Yeah.
you went to the other index,
Right.
independent of performance, just based on
Right.
expenses. And
Right.
that's, I think if we had that could help us
Yeah, if we were only talking
decide.
about, a little difference,
Right.
this is a significant difference.
Yeah.
0.02 is a
Right.
lot compared to where
Right.
you're at. Is there a way we can, when you show that, when you bring that back to us, that similar to what we just did with the two,
Yeah. Do a little chart
that, or
like
you can
this.
show how much money
Yeah.
that would save a participant by
Yeah.
joining that fund?
Yeah. We have 82 people in that fund. It's a little almost 2.5% of the plan, so
Yeah.
it could be meaningful.
So, Nate, the committee is asking that next time we bring it back a version of like the fee efficiency spreadsheet so you show them the actual dollar differences.
Yeah, we can do the same.
Okay.
We can build another slide in.
Okay.
And with all the other plans too, to say compared to what we've stayed in Carilion, what these other options were, they would
The
save
other
the
in this
participant.
category,
Yeah.
director? Okay. Yeah, no
Yeah.
problem.
I think that's what we were gonna do, was show a couple options on top of just so we have good idea what we're wrong.
We can do it. More analysis is better. All right. Large value. So no flags in this category, but pointing out, committee's heard this before, but now we're starting to see it reflect in the performance. Longtime portfolio manager Claire Hart retired from the JP Morgan Fund late last year. The performance prior to retirement had actually started to slow down, but it's enough now that it is below the benchmark on the 3-year, below the benchmark on the 5-year. However, it is still on the capital markets line, so the risk reward is still appropriate over the 5-year period. So I don't think we have liability there at the moment. But Putnam has certainly been the better of the two. JP Morgan historically has been more risk adverse. But when we look at upside downside capture, you know that of late Putnam has been better on both metrics. There is about 4.5% of the plan in Putnam, only 1% in JP Morgan. Now, JP Morgan has been good at playing defense in the down year of 2022, which was a year in which the Fed was raising interest rates to slow down inflation. Stocks lost money that year. JP Morgan, you can see, had a pretty small loss there. Putnam had a bigger loss. The benchmark had a bigger loss than both. As the markets recovered, Putnam swung into the profitability pretty big, beat both their competitor and their benchmark. JP Morgan struggled against both of late. So sometimes conservative can miss out on some of the gains in the market. So if I look at the next slide on a 6 and 12 month chart, the 12 month chart's about a push between the two, but the 6 month certainly favors Putnam. So I've been on calls with JP Morgan Equity Income's manager team. I do think that there is a strong team. It is some of the people that worked with Claire, but I don't think we can ignore the performance of 23-24. That is pushing down their 3-year numbers. So I would recommend that we put at least a gray flag, if not, go ahead with a red flag on the fund based on this 3-year. I mean, you have alternatives to consider on the following pages, but the committee's normal process has been to flag a fund to give it time for recovery, which, as we know, at the start of today's meeting, has helped us on a couple of investments that have improved their.
I like the idea of adding a red flag to this one. Like, put some on the clock a little bit and things will improve, then we can make a change. They do, and then we can remove it.
Yep. Stick to the process. I like
it. Yeah, I agree. I think it's going to be, you know, they're lagging on the 3, they're almost lagging on the 5, right? And they're going to lose 2021.
Yep.
Where they're positive, right? And it's going to fill in with the current results, which. So it's seems like it might be a little bit of an uphill battle. I mean, so I would err towards red flagging
it. I think it needs to be red flag. Yep. Yeah, great. Any thoughts online about that?
Anyone?
Nope. Right. All right. So I think we're gonna red flag JP Morgan. Putnam stays as it is. So those were the items of attention for attention on the money purchase plan. Now we look at the items for review on the 457 plan. So only the 457 plan do we have a natural resources fund, the Virtus Stephen Phelps Water Fund. Not a big part of the plan. It's less than 0.25% of the assets. 13 employees have found their way into this category. This does focus on companies that may be in your industry. There are only, until recently, only 2 mutual funds that even invested specifically in the water industry. The S&P Global Water Index there is a bit of a narrower index, which means they buy bigger company stocks and fewer companies. But you'll notice, and we've looked at this a few years, noticing that our fund is underperforming the S&P benchmark, but having no other place to go, have stuck with what we have. But now there is a Fidelity fund that has reached the 5-year minimum in a Fidelity fund. So keep that, take that with a grain of salt. the 5-year minimum to pass our screenings for review that you might consider today. And again, we normally start with a red flag or gray flag in this process, but you haven't seen this fund before, so we thought we'd share it with you. Virtus Duffin Phelps struggling on a 6 and 12 month basis, making about 1% the last 6 months, benchmark making closer to 4.5%. So we've considered the Calvert Global Water Fund before, but that's not doing us any favors. You now can consider the Fidelity Water Sustainability Fund, which the manager's only been there 2 years. The fund has been out for 5, so it does have a 5-year track record here at the bottom chart. Expense-wise, it's 93 basis points, but it actually pays back 35. So that would make it the cheapest of the three options. We don't normally come in and whack somebody for underperformance, but we didn't have an option before, so I thought you might at least consider that. Morningstar rating-wise, and this doesn't happen too often in this meeting, but the Calvert and Virtus actually get a negative rating from Morningstar, where we do get a nice positive rating, 4 stars and bronze for the Fidelity. And then we like to show you 3 and 5 year numbers. Let me show you 6 and 12 month numbers. Hasn't been good for anybody the last 12 months, but Fidelity, the best of the worst. So a lot of ways you could go here, everybody. At least you're now aware that there is a choice.
Thanks for bringing us this alternative, Scott. I mean, I'm usually not one to get rid of a fund quickly, but based on what you just said, the Fidelity thing is higher rated by Morningstar, cheaper to our participants, has performed better over the last 5 years, and is closer to the benchmark. So, I mean, I kind of think collectively those things are pretty compelling. If we're ever going to make a quick move, I think this is just a better option to our participants in this category across the board.
And the notification will only go to those 13 employees, or will it go to the entire?
Well, we notify everybody, right? So, yeah.
I guess my only
the same notice is, would have.
If you say something about water to a bunch of water employees, I don't want to like draw their attention. Say, hey, I need to invest in this. Like, but I guess that's on them to say that. But I know
we're not making a recommendation.
No, I know. Just it's getting wild there.
It brings attention, which could be good and bad.
I wholeheartedly agree with Jason's analysis here. I just wanted to check with our policy. Can we go straight from no flags to a change?
If there are reasons to not do it, I'm willing to listen, but it seems to all line up.
I think you're right.
Just do it. And we've been kind of struggling with this category for a little bit.
It
seems like this could improve it across the board for participants and for the committee's fiduciary responsibility. So I say do it. I agree.
Is Duff Oldrops here that wants to speak to the otherwise I think it's a good idea.
What if you just got out of the game completely?
You could eliminate the category. That's the committee's prerogative as well.
Is there any upside to that though, beyond just giving less options?
Well, I would say if you looked at most retirement plans, it's uncommon to have a water fund in your plan. So maybe that's a good thing not to have it. It is in the natural resources category. So it's being measured against things that would be different natural resources that do differently, different parts of the economic cycle. So at times it's going to look wonderful. Sometimes it's not. But if there's enough interest, the committee gauges that 13 people's enough interest, then I think Fidelity is a better option. If the committee's bias is thinking that we have fewer options make the plan easier to understand, then I would say eliminate.
We could always eliminate it then.
Yep.
Switching.
You know what those dollars are? A chance at the land.
Probably. Right.
Down the road, if you just eliminate it, then it's like, well, we kind of don't get done.
I didn't write it.
Yeah.
Kind of just doing the fiduciary
right.
responsibility that this committee has, just making sure that those participants get the best bang for their buck.
Right.
And then decide later if it's best just to be out of that category.
Any, how much money's in the Virtus?
Let me double check. Second.
Didn't quite catch on.
$115,000.
How much?
One five, $115,000.
Small.
So we make the change, shall we?
Yeah.
Okay.
To Fidelity. Of course,
purchase stuff in 12,000. Fidelity's in is our water option.
Heading on to director's comments, I think it might be wise for us to bring back a consideration to consolidate and maybe map this to a different fund.
Good.
The activity for a meeting in the fall.
Yep.
It's cost the participants money, though, to switch at all, so it doesn't set them
back. No transaction costs. There's no friction that we'd have to worry about there. It's just what do we think is best for the participants? But yeah, so what we can bring back is some potential landing places for people to consider. So.
And I think we want to compare, you know, the performance of this fund, this category, against some of other specialty categories. Like, are we really, you know, is it really underperforming some of the other specialties we offer people? And that, then maybe yes, maybe you don't want to offer it. But
okay.
I think just the context and where the money go.
Thank you, everybody. Great feedback and thoughts. Okay, so might remember a red flag put on Lions Bernstein large cap growth in January. We have two choices in the large growth category. You've heard me say this before, but a very difficult category to stay up with the benchmark. There are six or seven very large companies that dominate this category. They all had a very difficult start to the year and had a big rally. So funds that don't just own six or seven stocks struggle. AB is a four-star rated fund for reference, a neutral for Morningstar. Manager team has been there 13 years. In the last 10 years, they're 21st percentile. So they've beat almost 80% of their peers. But the 5-year is 59th percentile, the 3-year is 61, the 1-year is 78. So if you look at the last decade, the first 5 years of the decade were far better than the last five as a relative performer. As a, it's an absolute performer. Everybody's happy with large growth, but we work in the world of relative performance. T. Rowe Price All Cap Opportunities, which is the old T. Rowe Price New America, it does have more value and mid and small cap exposure than the typical fund in this category, which is why we use the Russell 3000 as a secondary benchmark. T. Rowe is staying above that benchmark, but struggling with the traditional Russell 1000 growth benchmark. T. Rowe's 4 stars in gold, manager tenure 9 years. Their 1-year numbers and 3-year numbers are also difficult. Their 5 and 10 year numbers are excellent. The 5-year does include these 5 years, this decade, so it's better than AllianceBernstein on the 5-year. That's what you can see on your middle chart here. So both of them more defensive, but both of them struggling to keep up with the absolute return. So that's a 3 and 5 year. If we look at a 6 and 12 month, T. Rowe's under the Russell 3000 on the 12 month, above it on the 6 month. But both of them struggling. Ironically, AB's actually done a little bit better since December of last year than T. Rowe had, even though T. Rowe looks better on the longer-term numbers. So we can consider other alternatives. In orange is a reference. Remember, we're on the 457 plan in reference to funds that we offer in this category in the money purchase plan. So we have the same T. Rowe fund in both plans. And the other plan, we use the Philly Large Cap Growth Index option. So that is because it tracks the exact benchmark, has done better than most of the active managers. terms of active managers you can consider, we have Fidelity Growth Discovery, another Fidelity name, JP Morgan Large Cap Growth, which is probably the one we use the most in this category with our clients, Loomis Sayles, which has been the best performer, and then Putnam, which is a bit more middle of the pack. And then please note on the secondary chart, here's the revenue sharing. AllianceBernstein gives back 15. T. Rowe has no refund. Like all Fidelity retail stock funds, it refunds 35 on Fidelity Growth Discovery. JP Morgan is a zero revenue share version. Loomis Sayles charges 67, but refunds 25. And Putnam is going to charge, I'm sorry, yeah, they're both 67. Putnam 67, refunding 20. Now, on the five-year chart, nothing here is going to be all that exciting to you. On the three-year chart, I'm sure your eye goes to the Loomis Sayles. So one choice could be just to go to the index fund and remove AB, but my concern would be is that both plans have the same two funds. And there's always been a preference, I think, among participants to have more variety. That's why we have two different lineups. So are we at the point where AB needs to go? Anybody want to give this another 90 days? If not, which fund makes the most sense to bring in?
If we're using the Russell 1000 as the benchmark, that category is kind of struggling, you were saying earlier. Was that?
There's just very few active managers that are keeping up.
Because of the interest rates and the tariff stuff, is that what you
use? No, it's mainly because you have a $4 trillion stock in NVIDIA, you have a $3.8 trillion stock in Microsoft, Apple's at $3.3 trillion. There's just so much money concentrated in so few companies that a diversified mutual fund can't keep up with it. Now, if those bigger stocks are doing poorly, then they would look great, but they're not. Right now, NVIDIA's stock is worth more than the economy of Germany. And those seven companies are worth more than Europe.
Yeah, each one of their portfolios are pretty similar.
You think the performance would be identical because it's all the same stocks. Just how much of them do you own? So for some tiebreakers on recent performance, it's certainly been Loomis Sayles, but please don't forget that Loomis does have the highest standard deviation. So that means on a downside that we can be concerned about their risk. We look at the upside downside capture. AB is not quite capturing the upside. They're getting all the downside. T. Rowe is attractiveness as they do play defense very well. You do pick up more gains with Loomis, but also more risk. And then on recent performance, the 1 year, 2 year, 3 year, it's definitely been Loomis Sayles. It's the best fund.
Mr. Chair, can I make a comment?
Please.
Yeah.
Can we bring it back to the next meeting and review it before we take a position on this one?
We have this red flag since January.
Right. We'll just leave it there.
We can keep it review, on red flag for two more meetings.
I mean, I'm okay with it. Loomis is tempting, but it's kind of, it might be living off its one 2023 year, which did really well.
Right.
So I don't want to be too influenced by that. Though it is a 5-star in gold fund from Morningstar, so there's something behind it. But I'd be comfortable maintaining the red flag on AB. God, do you think we're in a position with T. Rowe that we need to consider something
that was
it?
That was a thought of mine.
So what exactly are you
like that one?
What exactly are you recommending for this one?
Well, to follow the process, I would say you probably need to make a change. To follow my gut, I would say let's give it more time. because every cycle is a cycle, and at some point it'll shift the other way. So I'd be curious to see how these funds do given more time. So I like your idea of giving it more time. And we're well within the boundaries of our process, so I think we can give it more time if people think it's worthwhile.
All right, well, let's see what the whole body thinks then. Thank you.
Thank you.
Quick clarifying question. Earlier one, we had two official benchmarks in our plan. Is this the case as well for this one where it is both of you don't have an effect? Because I think what Jason is alluding to here of red flagging, basically having both these on red flag might be appropriate, and then bringing those back to the future meeting.
Yeah.
Maybe. I definitely think we maintain the red flag on maybe.
Absolutely.
Maybe Kiro is more of a gray flag situation. I'm sensitive to that because it's the other plan also, Scott. So that means we're going to see it. When will we see it in the 401A?
Yeah.
Review over. Okay. So
yeah.
I'm almost thinking maybe we do. We're going to see it again. Maybe we don't.
I would actually say we just gray flag it at the minimum on both plans.
Okay.
Yeah. Does anyone feel red flag ready?
Support.
That sounds
good. Keep the red, keep the red and add the gray. Cheat
okay. Thank you, everybody. Great discussion today. So on the 401A plan, items for consent, were there any items in the consent group that people wanted to pull for discussion? Not, that concludes my presentation. I will yield back to the chair.
Okay. All right. We've covered a lot. Do we think we have it all good on your end to report?
We're a little tricky today.
Yeah, there was a lot of stuff.
So let me go down my list. So we've got for the 401A American Fund new, we're going to remove the gray flag.
Yes.
We're going to change Virtuous Duff and Phelps to Fidelity Water.
Yep.
For Principal Midcap, S&P 400, and the Carry-On Scout Midcap, we're bringing back to committee for more options and data. Is that correct?
Yep.
Okay, and the Putnam Large Cap Value and the JP Morgan Equity Income, we're going to red flag both of those.
I think we're going to maintain the red flag on. No.
Putnam's not a flag.
Yeah, right.
Was it just the JP Morgan?
Just the JP Morgan goes on.
Yes. Goes
on red flag.
Okay.
Yep.
Anidi, do you have anything different?
I had it as a JP Morgan equity income as gray flag.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is that right?
That's gray.
The gray flag?
Yeah. We kick it around so many times.
Yes.
Yeah.
We need
thank you. Yeah, Dave. I was going to say that. The FB efficiency share class review, did we mention that?
We voted on that.
We just voted on it.
I think kind of, or is that part of actually, no, I don't know.
We voted on the A versus B.
That's
for the
right.
GIF.
That's right.
Should I go back to this?
And then we also have the AB large cap growth and the T row price. Those are on.
So maintaining the red flag on AB large cap, and then we are placing gray flags on both T row price and both the plans.
Yes.
So red on the AB large cap?
Yes. We're maintaining
that. The T row price.
Yep.
On
okay. Both plans.
And it'll be, the T row even though it wasn't presented today, it'll be in the other plan too.
Yep.
So then on the efficiency, my recommendation would be to move number two to the K6, number three to the T's, and then on the 457, both being Janus funds, we have T shares for both.
So yes. Everyone that brought the decrease.
Right? Yes. This is probably the hardest meeting from a record. No exaggeration, so well done.
Okay, so on all of those, does somebody wish to make a motion?
I can make a motion.
And I think I heard Director Omesquist say second.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, perfect. Any comments from any in the room or online? Being none, I will make ask for the vote.
Okay, roll call, Director Wygant.
Yes.
Director Mesqua.
Yes.
Director Jung. Director Jung. Jason Dadakis.
Yes.
Kevin O'Toole.
Yes.
That motion carries 4-0.
Okay, I'll make a recommendation that. Did we lose? Oh.
Yeah.
I'll make a recommendation that we agendize these on the consent calendar for our August 6th meeting.
I'll second.
And then I will ask for if there's any announcements or reports. Being done, we're adjourned. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.